This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning. Time for another edition of our favorite segment for you and me and so many of, obviously, according to how many people listen and download, our favorite segment, Thursday Coast, with the founder of the largest online progressive community, DailyCoast.com, host of the podcast, The Brief, and the founder of Civics with a Q. He told us last week about some new things Civics is going to be doing. Can't wait to hear about that. Welcome back, Marcos. How are you, buddy?
Doing good. Thank you so much.
Good to have you. You have written in the past few hours about what's taking place at Daily Coast. Some changes are being made. The market is changing, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough time to be in media. Obviously, you know this, Mark. You're in media. We all know this, and I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's, you know, it's so heavy and hard and difficult that sometimes that's the only way to sort of relieve some of that pressure. And
yeah, you have to laugh you from crying.
Oh my freaking God.
It ain't what it used to be, y'all.
So there's kind of two realities, you know, Daily Coast. I mean, the bottom line is we have to downsize our staff by about 20%, hitting all parts of the company. Freaking sucks. Nobody's happy. Nobody wanted to do this. But two sort of factors have sort of conspired to make this inevitable. One is Trump was good for media. And it was really good. I mean, this is why the media covered him 24/7, right? He was good for ratings. He brought in money. He's so freaking horrible that people can't stop looking at the train wreck. And so, and that was definitely the case for progressive media, progressive organizations. I mean, top to bottom, you look at every, you know, whether it's media, whether it's an advocacy group, times financially, Trump years were good. It was a good time to build. And
ratings.
For the media ratings, but if you're a progressive organization, people were scared, right? I mean, they engaged in the fight like progressives have never engaged in a fight. And that's why we won in 2018 and 2020. And even by extension, last year, you know, this is all part of that sort of Trump-fueled panic that he created. But the thing is, once Joe Biden won and Democrats had control of Congress, even with Sinema and Manchin, people were able to relax a little. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't want anybody to think that it was unsustainable, Mark. I mean, most of us were up, what, doom scrolling at 2 a.m, you know, through the weekends. That was not healthy for us as individuals. It was not healthy for us as a country. It was very healthy for media organizations that depended on that attention and money. So that was a thing. So across the board, we've seen a 30% drop in traffic in media and social media, all of them except for TikTok. So it's not this, not just partisan media. This is CNN, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, it's Washington Post, New York Times. Everybody has seen a 30% drop in traffic and engagement. And that's sort of this hangover, what I call the Trump hangover. So that was part of it. But I got to say, we knew this. This was not a big surprise. We planned for it, right? So we expected to have a little bit of a loss last year, but we built a rainy day fund. You know, we know that our business, since we rise and fall according to the election cycle, we know it's cyclical, right? So we can smooth that out. We have the 2024 presidential election gearing up. McCarthy is the asylum in the House, you know, that is going to generate a lot of interest and attention and engagement. So we thought, okay, we'll take a loss and that's fine because 2024 is going to rebound. But what happened is that a big part of our business is email and email fundraising. And Mark, I don't know your email inbox looks like, but everybody's, at least mine and everybody I talk to, it is an absolute disaster, right? It's just dozens of campaign solicitations, unsolicited. And there's been this rise of these new email brokers that what they do is they buy emails from losing campaigns who are just trying to pay their bills. And then they've amassed over time these email lists that are tens of millions large. And they sell those to campaigns for peanuts. And so that one, it's harmed our own email fundraising efforts. But two, it's people are less likely to donate. Their email inboxes are full and overwhelmed. And people are turned off and angry at the endless solicitations. And this is, again, systemic. The entire progressive campaign ecosystem is suffering. Their emails aren't as effective because these brokers have broken it. It's a tragedy of the commons, right? And what that means is that not only, we came in, we came in $2.5 million under where we expected to be because of this dramatic shift in email fundraising. And so two of our big revenue prongs, email fundraising and advertising, took hits, particularly the email fundraising. Our third prong is community contributions. And that remains strong, but it's just not enough to make up losing a third of our revenue, basically. That's what gets us here. And I think it's systemic, right? Everybody, we're seeing layoffs everywhere. Media is being decimated. People don't support media in the way they support other things, for better or for worse. We don't want to put up a paywall. The ones that are surviving right now put up paywalls. I mean, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Washington Post, I think, has their paywall up now. So we definitely don't want to go there. Our job is to fight for progressive change and to get people engaged in the fight, and creating a financial barrier to participation would literally undermine everything that we stand for. That means that we just have to adjust our staff to accommodate this new revenue reality. And it freaking sucks. And it's the worst thing I've ever had to do. But it's either we do that now or we do it later and we have to cut even more of the company, right? That's just the brutal, depressing math that we're facing.
Yeah. In this shrinking media environment, and I'm glad we're talking about this, I don't do a paywall for anything I do. And I've been encouraged and advised to do so. Just can't do it. I've been doing journalism for over 30 years, and I haven't figured out a way to get people. I may have to, I don't know. But is that something we're going to have to think about, though, Marcos, as things move forward? Because, and then let me say this, you know, we all act based on our own experiences. I don't know anybody who pays for the New York Times, Washington Post, or Wall Street Journal. I don't know anybody who does it. As a matter of fact, most people I know who get information or articles from there get it some other kind of way. And they mm-hmm. do whatever, they use whatever workaround. Plus, Daily Coast, Make It Plain, outfits like ours are supposed to be providing an alternative, a more objective alternative to what the Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal are providing. And we don't want to be like them either. So, you know, how are we set apart if we start asking people to pay? And I'll be honest with you, I can't get around the economics or the math of giving something away free for decades. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I want you to pay for it. And it goes for me too. Nobody's ever paid for my show. When was I was on satellite radio, people had a satellite radio subscription. I guess it's like cable, but that's different to pay. If we have to subscribe to every individual, unique, and respective source of information, how do you pick and choose that? Who's left? It just gets to be, and everybody's paying $10 a month, which ends up being even more money for everything. So,
yep. It's the Substack model, right? Where some people are trying to strike out on Substack and have, you know, and have a subscription model there. People paying $3 a month or $6 a month for their writing. And I don't think it's particularly sustainable. I mean, a few people will make it work. Like anywhere else, you have a few that rise to the top, and whether it's luck, skill, talent, all of the above, are able to make a go of it, but it's not a sustainable model writ large. So to me, well, I mean, at Daily Coast, we can do it. Like Daily Coast, given contributor support, given what email fundraising we still have, it's not 100% gone, right? But it's just damaged. Advertising, we can have a decent site. We just can't maintain the size we did. We were at 90 plus employees, which was sustainable when we had those revenue streams in full swing in Trump years. You know, good times have passed, right? And so we have to adjust. It just makes it hard to maintain a certain level. And you know what sucks is that people are impacted. That's the part. I wish it was just a spreadsheet when you just cross a few, you know, columns out and like, you know, it's good to go. And not that easy. But that said, I think Daily Coast is in a place where we at least have some established revenue sources. A lot of progressive media does not. And we saw this with the decimation of the liberal blogosphere back in the day, because conservatives, they will, that's the answer, Mark. I mean, the answer, you want the answer is our big donors don't fund media. They don't think it's important, or they think that the New York Times and NPR are liberal media, and they are not liberal media. Conservatives will never stop funding the next media organization. You think they have it all. Oh, they already have Fox News, and they already have AM radio, and they already have the Washington Examiner and the National Review and the Weekly Standard. Oh, but why not? Let's add Ben Shapiro to the pile. Let's add, you know, let's the Daily Caller to the pile. I mean, there's Newsmax, ONN. Like, there's always the net. They're always adding and creating conservative media. And we certainly don't see that on our side. Daily Coast certainly hasn't. And it's a major failing in the progressive ecosystem. And I think a lot of it is just this whole perception that the New York Times is liberal, so therefore we don't need partisan media. And it's a miscalculation. It kind of screws up, because we see the impact that their media ecosystem has on the political process. We see it. Everybody sees it.
And that's one of the failings of our side, because the right got it. They financed their media. They sustain it. You're right. That's just something we didn't do. We know the history of Air America, the myriad of startups I was involved in to bring progressive radio to the airways to compete with the likes of Rush Limbaugh. Never got off the ground. And other than Al Franken having his own show now, just even in terms of the party and its leadership, it's almost impossible. And I bet this is true for your reporters at Daily Coast. It is practically impossible for a progressive media outlet to arrange, schedule, and host an interview with a Democratic U.S. senator. It is almost impossible. Because now, the other side, they send their people out. They get it. Mm. I'm going to go on Fox. I'm going to go on Newsmax. I'm going to go on these other things.
Yep.
But, oh, you know. And I've been invited to meetings with Senate staffs, with the Senate in the room. Oh, it's so good to see you, Senator. Reverend Thompson. Oh, we love you. Won't appear on to have a conversation. So it's not just the money; it's the lack of prioritization of our. Now yeah. Netroots Nation. You know, you get people to come that once a year thing. That's fine. I'm not knocking people who organize that. I'm not knocking people who do that. That's an accomplishment. But you know, when was the last time there was a direct quote from a U.S. senator on the part of a journalist in Daily Coast on this show anywhere else? So we just don't support it like we should. I just want to put that out there. Now, you're right, it is unfortunate. And folks, you know, this is the landscape. This is what we're dealing with. But continue to support Daily Coast and all of us other folk out there who are trying to do that. We're just two on here right now. There are many others.
Yeah, I want to make sure that's clear. This is not woe is me and woe is us. This is yeah. If you value progressive media, support the outlets that you frequent. And it's not Daily Coast, whatever. I don't care, right? Whoever it is, like Mark, support that and make it so that we can stay, you know, we can do the work that we're doing. And so, it's a slog in the media business. In the best of times, it's tough. I mean, nobody, I mean, maybe back in the days of Hearst, right? They made a lot of money, but those days are long, long, long gone. So it's imperative, I think, that people really support those outlets that they value, because you don't take them for granted. That's what I'm saying. Don't take them for granted.
And honestly, the big folks, you all who are now charging the big names in the Fourth Estate, a lot of this is their fault. Because when the internet broke through, they decided to give away their product for free, and it devalued the profession. Salaries got less, jobs went away, people were forced to create their own media. I mean, and now anybody's a journalist. Some of us I went to school, I have a degree in journalism. But what does that mean today? Because, you know, everybody's kind of forced to do their own thing. And then one other point I want to make in terms of the way outreach is made, we don't control any algorithms either. So you can do your very best in terms of putting some information out there. But if Elon Musk decides that nobody's going to see Daily Coast's tweets or Make It Plains or someone else's, and I'm not saying he's literally sitting in his office. Well, I think he has done that a couple of times, sitting in his office. But the algorithms themselves, even before he got there, were discriminatory. And even the social media companies, they're looking for some money now. So what they do is they'll say, well, we're going to let this be posted and be viewed so many times this time. And then when you notice, you all try this at home, post something, everybody sees it. Post something else again in a few days. Look at how the number goes down. You wonder, why is my number going down? I want the big numbers out here. The number's going down because they want to incentivize you to pay to boost the post. Mm-hmm. Okay, so none, and I'm not talking about, it just happens all, just do it for yourself. Try it out, you'll see what happens. Something I posted today might get 1,000 views, post something tomorrow, 300. I'm wondering, is it me? You know? But it's not. So all of these things have an impact. And again, it's unfortunate because those of us who have built our careers and our professions and our degrees and our education, journalism is a profession. It literally is. I mean, there's an art and a science to it. That'd be like, you know, someone devaluing those who are engineers. I mean, you just can't do that. So it's in a bad place. So we all out here hustling, but hustling, I think, for a good cause, because we want to share with our audiences real and true information, because we're touched, we're moved by the other side's falsehood. We live in a post, and I've been sharing this with other guests who write books, Marcos, and I've shared with you before. When Obama got elected, post-racial. No, we're not dealing in a post-racial environment. We're dealing in a post-factual environment.
Mm-hmm. Where post-truth.
Post-truth. And so people can say things, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's you can just say it, and it, whether it's true or not, doesn't have to be true. And it gets traction because the other side is mobilizing the traction. They're not afraid of promoting dishonesty anymore and people believing in their own truths. And, you know, I declassified the documents. No, you didn't. Yeah. You know, Marcos is not sitting here right next to me today. But you can see him right there. But if I go on Fox and say Marcos didn't sit next to me, there was some people, yeah, that wasn't really Marcos. Marcos wasn't sitting next to me. So, I mean, that's the unfortunate space that we're in. So And Marcos talked about me offline. Appreciate his sensitivity to those being affected by this. Of course, he would be. That's the kind of person he is. That's what Daily Coast is. What can you do?
Yeah, I'm gonna send you this link, and maybe you can share with your crew, and I think you'll enjoy it too. It's by Cory Doctorow, who's an author and technologist, and he wrote a post called "The Shitification of TikTok," I believe, and basically he goes through how every social media outlet starts off open, you know, so everybody can participate. And you're following people. And so you're on Facebook, the things you follow is what you see. Or in Instagram, you follow people and you get who you follow. And eventually these social media outlets, inevitably, every single one of them realizes that there's not enough money to be made into it. So they got to start putting stuff into that feed. Okay. So at first, maybe it's ads, whatever. You're used to ads. Ads are everywhere. But then they realize that's not good enough. So they start messing with, like you were talking about, the algorithm. And in fact, Elon Musk just did it with Twitter, where people are not seeing the accounts they're following. They're seeing what Twitter thinks you should be looking at. And it's random shit. And so you're having progressives that have all this right-wing bullshit, right? Yeah. I sincerely doubt that the conservatives are seeing my post and yours showing up on their feed. This is Elon Musk we're talking about. But they all do it. And Instagram's the same way. Instagram was my way to see pictures from my friends and family. And now I get all sorts of crap and video. Like, I don't want this crap. I want to see my friends and my family. Is that too hard? They can't do that. And so it basically what happens is people start getting frustrated. They tap out. The numbers go south. They get more desperate and they get more aggressive and messing with the algorithm. And they become shit. Like that's, and it's actually now happening with TikTok. Where they claim, I mean, they are artificially boosting, you know, this just came out, certain accounts to make it seem that anybody can get a lot of viewers and, you know, and followers on TikTok when it's all being gamed to create this idea. And what Cory does is he compares it to the carnival where they let one person win the big teddy bear in one of those games. And the carny games are all rigged. You're not going to win the big teddy bear, but they let one person win it. So that person walks around with this big ass teddy bear, lets everybody else think that they also can win that teddy bear. And that's what all these social media outlets do. And it's what TikTok is doing now. And so inevitably, and I got to say, Facebook really screwed a lot of media outlets. They claimed that video was a pivot to video was a way to make lots of money. A lot of media outlets spent a lot of money shifting. They fired print reporters. They hired video people. They spent a lot of money shifting over. And then it turns out that it was all a lie. Like the numbers were literally completely cooked. A lot of organizations went out of business before, you know, because of that. I remember at one point, Daily Coast was getting, you know, 30 million page views a month from Facebook because people would share. This was back in the mid-teens. Early teens, and they would share Daily Coast material, and because people were sharing the stuff that they were interested in, and then Facebook decided that no, they literally overnight they cut that off after I believe the 2012 election. I believe it's when they cut it off. Might have been to 16. I don't remember exactly right now, but they just cut it off like that. Disappeared. Poof, went away overnight. Now it was low quality traffic. Didn't generate a lot of extra page views or revenue, so it didn't hurt the business that much, but it actually dramatically reduced our ability to reach people. And that was on purpose, right? Facebook decided that either you pay for that or you're somebody or some conservative people have figured out how to game it. Like we're not gonna sit there and game stuff unethically. And so it's all these challenges. And when everybody's attention is being sucked up by the social media outlets right now, it's TikTok. It's the only one that's still growing. When it's hard to break through, when you can't unless you pay. And even if you pay, you don't even know if it's real. Like you don't know what they're sending you. You don't know if the numbers are real. I look at some of those TikTok view numbers. I think they're BS. Like they don't, you know, I don't buy it. So I think we're going to find out, you know, just remember this in a year when the big scandal comes out, when TikTok was making up its numbers to get people to shift from Instagram, to shift from Facebook to TikTok, because that's where the audience is. And I bet we're going to find out that the audience was all made up and didn't really exist. So it's a tough market out there. Navigating is tough. I'm a printed word guy, Mark. You know, I got my podcast. I enjoy doing it, but in the end, I'm a writer and I love printed word, and it's a tough business right now, but we got to make it work. And the good thing is that we do have a core audience that's incredibly committed and activist, and they're going to make the phone calls and they're going to walk precincts and they're going to knock on doors and they're going to do the hard work it takes to win elections. And that in the end is really what excites me and motivates me, and it's worth fighting for. So.
Right. And I know we spent a lot of time on this. This is one of the things I want to share. And I always feel a duty to what Marcos described in terms of what's happening in media. It also happens to us as individuals. That's the other point. And sometimes when I talk to young people, and you know, our young people are dealing with a lot of emotional issues now and traumas and everything. They're young people. I'm saying this to all of you, have young people in your life who are impacted by social media and don't know what we just shared. I spoke to a group of young people, and some of them, you know, were going through things because they didn't feel like, you know, and my own children been in there. Not enough people, nobody likes my posts. And they internalize it. And it affects their self-worth. I explained, and they looked like they just couldn't believe what I was saying when I said it. I said, y'all, you realize people not seeing your posts and not liking your posts is a reflection of you. There's an algorithm that decides it. Mm-hmm. People you want to like.
Absolutely.
It. The people you want to like it may not have actually seen it. It may not have shown it. So you can't, you know, determine your own self-worth and self-esteem based upon how many people look and like at what you post. Okay. So I'm just saying, folks, we're in this space now. It's a troubling one. It's a dangerous one. Something's going to happen. Hopefully one day the bubble will just stop and we won't be so dependent and we'll go back to... Because remember, at one time in our human evolution, we made it without Facebook. We were doing all right. You know, it was, you know, we... So, you know, stuff wasn't all bad. I mean, you know, that's not, these things are not the ticket to freedom and truth and righteousness and salvation. So, you know, we just got to, you know, be sober. Maybe, and I think, I have a feeling one day we'll get back to people appreciating what real work and real journalism is.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
A couple of things I do want to touch on, though, in the political world. First, briefly, one, this issue with the debt ceiling. It takes me back to a phrase or a term in our vocabulary that you coined, American Taliban. What is the point? It's like... And these people run for office. Your tax dollars are paying for McCarthy and Marjorie Taylor Greene and these other folks, Matt Gaetz. That's a whole nother thing. There was a thread on him. I don't know if you saw it. Good God. On Twitter just the other night that, I mean, it was just, you know.
That's like every night.
These are just allegations, folks.
That's. I'd be careful about that.
But that stuff is out there. Okay, so your tax, you elect them, your tax dollars pay for them. Who do you hire for a job and pay them for a job? And their goal and existence is to not function in the job and prevent the institution. So let's say Marcos hires somebody to work for Daily Coast. We pay them a salary. And every day, his job is to make sure Daily Coast doesn't do anything and doesn't function and actually erodes and dissolves. That's what they're doing.
They literally run on the, we're going to break the thing that doesn't, right. We don't think even works, and hire us to break it even more. And you know, Mark, you know the reason why, because they think they've convinced those yokels, those deplorables, that government is giving your people and my people free stuff, right? It's the blacks and the Latinos that are getting all the free stuff. And therefore, yeah, let's go. We hate those people. Go break it. We don't want those people to get free stuff anymore. I mean, the reality, of course, is that we're subsidizing their rural communities. They wouldn't last a second without us. But that's their big grift. That's what they've convinced them. And it's racism and bigotry and xenophobia and anti-Semitism and all those isms that they're using to get people to vote. To vote the way they do. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, they're being convinced to vote against their own interests. I actually think a lot of liberals vote against their own interests. If you think, you know, it always depends on what you define it. If your own interest is to pay less in taxes, then yeah, I'm voting against my own interests because I'm happily paying for more taxes. But so interest is always kind of a sketchy, but they're definitely using racism and bigotry and the fact that those communities are economically distressed and abandoned. They're using that to basically hoodwink these people into voting the way they do, instead of saying, like, let's get government to actually help you and get this community out of its condition. They're electing people that are actually making the situation worse, which then just feeds into that vicious cycle where then they can even say, see, government doesn't work for you. Keep hiring Marjorie Taylor Greene and people like her. So, and it's even to the point where they're what they're advocating really is Putin style politics, right? They're anti-democracy, and of course we've seen it. Nothing new or shocking about that. Most of the Republicans in the House voted against certification of the 2020 election. So these have become an incredibly dangerous force in our politics and a threat to our democracy, and it's all predicated on that bed of racism and bigotry.
No, that's right. So, folks, keep that in mind. I mean, they, people being elected to positions, they're there to sabotage, saboteurism, all of that. I thought about you when the notifications were coming through the other night that the United States is sending tanks. I think Germany is sending some equipment. What are your thoughts about that? And what's taken so long to Ukraine? What's taken so long?
There's so many layers to this. Lots of things have taken so long. One of the factors in this whole tank debate, Ukraine asked for Western tanks a year ago. So it's taken about a year for this. Not quite. It was 10 months ago, but it's taken a while to get there. And there's two major factors. One of them is political. Is this idea that this would be a escalatory, you know, it would escalate the conflict. And it's taken this long for the West to finally realize that Russia's murdering hundreds of Ukrainians every single day. There's no more escalation. How can you escalate when they're literally sending massive rockets into apartment buildings to kill people for no other reason than a temper tantrum? And that's not even partisan. That's literally what they're trying. They're trying to make life so miserable for Ukrainian citizens that they surrender just to stop the misery, because they can't win on a military battlefield. Their military is a piece of crap, and they can't win militarily. So they're trying to, it's a temper tantrum. It's a Putin temper tantrum. So that's a big part of it. But probably the bigger part, and the one that people really don't want to talk about, the supporters of Ukraine, and because it's not convenient, is that logistically it's hard. A tank is required. You know, I think we talked about this really early on. My unit, I was rocket artillery. I was MLRS, which has been a big game changer in Ukraine. So my MLRS unit had 9 launchers. In those 9 launchers, you had a crew of 3 in each one. So you had 27 people that actually pressed a button that fired something. To support those 27 people, our unit, our battery was 300 soldiers. So it is incredible. It's fuel, it's ammo, it's medics, it's parts and supplies, it's the armory, it's maintenance, it's chemical, nuclear, biological warfare people, it's reconnaissance, it's what I did, which was command and control fire. There is so much that goes into supporting a unit, and a tank is the most logistically heavy, difficult part of any land force. I mean, aircraft and Navy ships obviously are another level, right? But in any land force, the tank is the most logistically heavy. An Abrams tank, the American tank, it gets 3 gallons per mile, not 3 miles per gallon, which would be horrendous enough. 3 gallons per mile. That's how much gas a M1 Abrams uses. Now, imagine trying to move this tank. And here's the funny thing. It uses that gas whether it's moving or not. So you can't even idle it. It is the second you, and it's a jet turbine engine. The second you crank that sucker up, it is burning. It's burning, you know, a gallon every couple, you know, a minute or two. And so you need massive supply of gas. And it's a jet turbine. So while you can use diesel in it, it's even less efficient if you're using diesel. You actually need to use a kind of jet fuel. So now you have a different kind of fuel in the battlefield. Then you have an engine that literally will break down every couple hundred miles. And you can't just go in there and change up some parts, right? You literally have to pull out the engine to be able to make repairs to it. Now, where do you do that in Ukraine? Because those facilities do not exist. And in fact, there are no NATO armies that use the M1 Abrams, right? So there's some facilities that the U.S. Army uses in Germany, but they were shut down a decade ago when the U.S. essentially pulled out, right? So now you got to create that logistical chain. The tank maintenance, you need somebody who can work on the engine. You need somebody who can work on the optics, what they use to target, laser designators, things like that. People think, oh, it's anybody can learn how to drive and shoot a tank. Yeah, that's the easy part. The mechanic school for an M1 Abrams in the U.S. Army is 6 months, and that's just the initial training. Then you go to your unit, and you spend years mastering the craft with people who already have years of their own experience teaching you how to do stuff. Ukraine has none of that. Nobody knows how to use that, and you can't send American forces into Ukraine to help them with that. So these are all things that literally take years to implement. Now, Ukraine already has dozens of different weapon systems to have to maintain and to sustain, which means to supply, repair, maintain. And every sort of addition, every new weapon system, there's a ramp-up period. So the U.S. was saying, you know what, we don't want to send them once because they're literally the most incredibly, incredibly difficult thing to maintain. Germany said, well, we're not going to send Leopard tanks, which is the European standard, and it's what most European armies use. Germany said, we're not going to send Leopards unless the U.S. sends Abrams. So finally, the U.S. said, all right, fine, we'll send Abrams. Now, nobody's expecting them to show up, at least for the next year. But once the U.S. said, we're going to send Abrams, then Germany, for whatever, lots of reasons, we don't need to get into, it's complicated, but Germany said, all right, let's open, we'll send some Leopards. And so it looks like Ukraine's going to get, you know, maybe 100 Leopard tanks, which is going to be great. Not as game-changing, though, as people think it is. What's game-changing is that the U.S. is sending Bradley, which are infantry fighting vehicles. They're sending over 1,000 infantry fighting vehicles. And that's going to allow the sort of massed armor that they need to punch through Russian defenses. Right now, the battlefield is trench warfare. There's nobody's moving vast distances. And Ukraine doesn't have the armor and firepower to punch through those lines right now. And that's what this will give them. And hopefully by March and April, we're going to see some real movement again on the battlefield.
Everything Marco's just described, folks, in terms of, you know, the difficulty, the challenges. I mean, you just can't pick up and be in a war. That's something to like. But everything he describes that Ukraine is dealing with, Russia's dealing with the same thing, which makes it even more ridiculous. And they're probably less organized.
Oh, even worse, because they're under sanction. They can't, they don't have the supplies to build the stuff. And this is what I like about the M1. It's not that it's going to have immediate battlefield impact, because it won't. What it does is it signals to Putin that the West is not losing interest in supporting Ukraine. And that while Russia's military is getting degraded by the day and they're running out of armor, they're doing these like bonsai attacks. It's crazy. It's just mass infantry, no armor support, no artillery. They're just getting massacred on field. But they're doing these mass infantry attacks. It's gruesome. The videos are gruesome. While they're running out of armor, Ukraine is only going to get better over the next year. And that's a signal to hopefully to Putin, if not Putin, maybe his military or some of these oligarchs, that maybe it's time to cut their losses because things aren't going to get better. The West is not losing interest and Ukraine's only going to get stronger.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Folks, again, back to our original point, and then I'll let y'all go for the day. The value of Daily Coast with its daily in-depth coverage of what's been going on in the Ukraine from people like Marcos who have military experience, that's invaluable. And so, you know, he's trying to hang on and Daily Coast trying to hang on. And unfortunately, things have to happen to remain in business. But it's providing a much needed service that we aren't getting elsewhere. And, you know, with the shrinking media objective and credible media environment that we're in, it's all that more valuable. So, folks, keep that in mind, dailycoast.com.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks appreciate as always, buddy. No, appreciate you too. Thank you, man.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.